Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
Oh, I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week on YouTube. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most podcast players. We hope you enjoy the episode. Quick recap, if you missed last week's episode, these episodes have been pre-recorded, which if you're watching us on YouTube, you'll know because we're wearing the same clothes as we were last week. We've gone straight into recording this after last week's episode, and that's because, well, we're away.
Yeah.
We're international men of mystery right now.
Basically, it's January 2021 now.
Yeah. We've actually recorded all these episodes 4 years ago, and we're now living in the Bahamas. But no, we're off living our best life, but working hard. Tony, by this point, would have been back from his trip, and he'll be slaving away at the dealership. So if you want to go and annoy him, feel free to go down there and kick some tyres.
Please do. No, don't say that. Don't kick tyres. Come and spend some money. Come on. Let me relieve you of some of your hard-earned pounds.
And reward you with a fantastic 0-3-year-old vehicle.
There we go. What a job, boy.
Yeah, are you still looking for someone to come and help you out?
Well, yes.
Ish.
Ish. I will. I mean, this is going to go out in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah. So
I'll be back.
Maybe
you
would have hired someone by then.
I will. I am tentatively looking for a lad. Bit of admin. Must have a driving licence. Someone fairly switched on to work alongside me and help me, basically. I don't want someone too young. I want someone responsible.
With some experience,
yeah.
What I would say is, because I think if you say, it seems a bit too general for now, I feel like you're going to get inundated.
Yeah.
Hold off, everybody. But if you are someone within the automotive industry, or I guess an administrative role or something like that, Tony will be doing a post, I guess.
I will do a post, yeah. I need like a bit of an all job man, you know, just to get involved and help them do all different aspects of the business, basically.
Based at Gravelwood.
Yeah, so someone local.
In Kent. So do not apply if you're in South Africa. Because
or Birmingham or anywhere. Like, I could commute down every day. Yeah. I'll come down the M40. I've had that before, by the way.
Well, for the producer role, there goes my WhatsApp. Let's turn that off. The producer researcher role that obviously we were sorting out for this show, I got quite a few applications from, I mean, all over the world. And I was like...
All over the world?
Literally all over the world.
Amazing.
Anyway, so yeah, keep your eyes on Tony's social media.
On my social media, yeah.
But yeah, so I at this point, where am I in the world at this point? I think I would have just... I think I'm in Morocco.
Have you had your baby yet?
Oh, yeah. No.
At this point?
Don't do that. Because that really makes it seem like we recorded. Well played. That was good. That was so quick. I'm in Morocco. I would have just left Morocco with the 360. So I teased it last week. But yeah, this insane adventure that I'm taking the 360 to the Sahara Desert, which as of the time of recording, I'm going to be doing it in a few weeks' time, but by the time this episode goes out, I would have done. So fingers crossed, I'm not still in the Sahara Desert with a 360 stuck in the sand. But anyway, we've got a fun episode for you. We've lined up some cool stuff to talk about, got some big topics. And I actually wanted to kick things off, dive straight into the fact that we missed last week discussing the sort of Jaguar Land Rover news that came out before we went on our big adventure.
Yeah.
Because JLR going through this kind of big rebrand, which
they are,
I knew about. I'd kind of, you know, been semi-briefed on.
given my close relationship with Dragula. But then really kind of made a big, big noise when it was officially announced that, well, Jaguar Land Rover are firstly becoming JLR, and in all kind of external comms and at dealership level, I think, branding-wise, they're pretty much dropping the Land Rover element of Land Rover Discovery, Land Rover Defender, Land Rover Range Rover, because officially a Range Rover is a Land Rover Range Rover.
Yeah.
But what JLR realized was that no one really says that. Like, everyone just says, I've got a Defender, I've got a Range Rover, I've got a Sport even. A lot of people say, I've got a Sport. So they're getting rid of the Land Rover element. The badges will still appear, the logo, but it's just not going to be called
Land Rover.
Yeah. Or Land Rover Defender. It's just going to be Defender.
Defender, yeah.
The branding is Defender. Do you think that's the same? Because automotive Twitter kind of went insane at this news. It was like, how can you kill such an iconic brand? But they're not really killing it. Does it make sense to you?
Partly. It does make sense partly because they are right, as in people refer to all these models as the model now. They don't say the Land Rover at the start. However, it's iconic. An actual Land Rover is iconic. It's gone back 60, 70 years, however long it's gone back. And all the dealerships are branded in that way. It's so recognisable. It's unbelievable. Right? They've had different facelifts and colours throughout the years. But you spot the sign a mile off. And it's not going to be there anymore, is it?
Theoretically. I mean, it's a bit unclear that because of the craziness, because of the furore.
It's going to have JLR. Just have JLR up.
JLR, and then sub that, you'll have the Range Rover brand, because I think Range Rover are going to have their own dealerships, aren't they?
Oh, they're really, really having boutiques. A swap round. Yeah, and I think within the dealerships, if I'm not wrong, they're going to have different, almost a bit like a department store.
Yes.
Where they're going to have like different sections of the showroom, like you're going to have a Defender section. You'll have salesmen that deal with Defenders only, I guess. You'll have Discovery, then you'll have Range Rover, as in Range Rover, Range Rover Sport. Evoque and Discovery Sport, I guess they'll probably be together. I mean, it's a completely, like, it's almost like, you know, when you go to a car show, they've all got different stands. I'm visualising it'll be something like that.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I mean, I think it's an exciting move because I'm a fan of all of these brands. And the fact that we don't have to call it a Land Rover Defender, I don't think really bothers me because let's call it Defender anyway. If I say Defender, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, that's the bit they're right against because that's how everyone refers to them. I've got a Defender.
And they're trying to do it for sort of, their claim is it's, you know, these are luxury products and simplicity is best when it comes to luxury. And you don't want to overcomplicate things. You don't want elongated names. And the Land Rover badge is still going to be there as a sort of, almost like a rubber stamp, as like a seal of approval or like a...
I'll tell you why I think they're really doing it. It's because... the online presence now, and they're just trying to, you know, blank canvas, make things really simple. It's like when, you know, when you go on all these online, Apple were really good example because that's what most of these businesses are trying to copy. They're all trying to copy Apple, because obviously one of the most successful companies in the world, and all these brands, they're all trying to copy Apple, and they make it really simple. So this is probably one way for Land Rover to clean their product up.
And improve their SEO, I suppose. So it's just easier for search terms. If you're just going into Google and just typing Defender and not Land Rover Defender, that's going to help as well, right?
Yeah.
Well, look, alongside that news, we did get the sort of, I think, semi-exciting news about new era Jaguar and what their first EV is potentially going to look like. And I'm just going to bring it up here because I don't want to get the stats wrong. But it's essentially, it was a Super GT, a circa 100 grand Super GT, which I think they're claiming is going to be good for around 430 miles of range. That's what they're aiming for.
That's a Taycan rival, is it? That sort of thing?
I guess so, yeah. So let's see, here we go, official. First all-new Jaguar is a 100K four-door GT. Now, styling-wise, it's supposedly going to look completely different to the Jags that we've known. This is a whole new identity for Jaguar. This is not just we're going EV. This has completely changed the brand, which, let's face it, they needed to do. I mean, I'm one of the biggest Jag fans in the world, but that brand was slowly dying, maybe? Like, how many people were actually buying? I mean, F-Type surely got to be their bestseller. Were people still buying XCs, XFs and things like that? XFs?
I would probably say the SUV versions, the E-Pace and the F-Pace were probably the best sellers.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. But even then, compared to their rivals, I think it would still be in small numbers, right? I mean, I think...
Yeah, of course. Because when you want to buy an SUV, we're going to talk about this a bit later on in the episode, actually. Mm. When you buy an SUV, how far down the list the Jaguar? When you've got all... I mean, we've just spoke briefly
high
about
for me.
Land Rover.
High up for me.
Yeah.
But low down for a lot of other people.
Yeah. Well, everyone knows your car choices.
Yeah.
And how you behave.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm so, like, hopeful. I don't necessarily think new Jag is going to be all me. Like, I don't know. Who knows? I want them to. I just want Jag to succeed. It's like the underdog team that you support in football or Formula One. You just want them to do well. So I just want Jag to do well. And I did a post not that long ago talking about the fact that even though I still have major red flags when it comes to the idea of living with an EV, so many EVs are starting to really attract me. Like, you know, I keep seeing BMW iXs everywhere. I think they're brilliant. Mm. I love that Hyundai Ioniq 6 thing. Mm. I'm kind of excited by the Lotus Eletre. We spoke about it not that long ago. Macan Electric, Cayman Electric, and then some electric Superb GT Ford. I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of into it. I don't think it's all that bad. If they get it right, I think it could be exciting and it could breathe some life into Jag, because the badge is what I think a lot of the time you buy with a luxury item, which brings the big question mark over the Land Rover thing again. But, you know, you're buying an identity as much as you are buying the product.
Well, and you are, but I mean, look at the price of it now. I mean, it's not going to be cheap anymore.
No, but Jags haven't been. I mean, my F-Type, over 100 grand. And if you look at competitors, there were cheaper cars that did a better job.
See, I would half fight you on that. I always thought, all right, at list they were expensive, but back then, not now so much, but back then you didn't pay list for them. You got a load of money off them. And after the first year, I always thought they were the R version of the S-Type, F-Type, I always thought was brilliant value for money when you compared to then its competitor after it was a year old.
Yeah, on used market, 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Used market, 1,000,000%. But yeah. I mean from new.
Yeah, but they never really sold at that money. You can put it up for what they like. You know, yeah, they were, what were they, 90, 100 grand-ish? But, you know, they never really sold list at that money. You know, there was always doing big deals on them and campaigns to get out of them. You know, they were probably selling for 80 grand or something like that. It was say, huge discounts. But then when they got to a year old and they were 65 grand or 60 grand.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
100%. I mean, and who knows if that's going to be true for new era, Jag. Maybe this 100K electric
numbers,
GT.
Though, are they? They're not chasing numbers.
No, super low production, yeah. I believe.
Yeah.
I believe. I wasn't at this big announcement, this big press announcement, so I've been trying to catch up on the official
wording.
What about
wording, SUVs? Are they doing an SUV one?
Well, there's a whole load of new models, but this is the first, they've said this is going to be the first model.
Right.
I'm treading a little carefully here because I've been briefed off the record and I didn't attend the on the record announcement. So I'm just trying to slightly...
Don't talk about something else.
...box myself. Yeah, a little bit. Sticking to what we know, as I say, targeting an electric range of 430 miles from a new GT all-electric powertrain. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And let's move on. Because you actually did touch on it. Something in there about SUVs. Uh-huh. Because you messaged me last week saying there's something in the question, or there's a topic in whether it's still worth buying a diesel SUV or which SUVs suit diesel or petrol more, because something we have hit on every now and again, so many manufacturers are moving away from diesel, offering smaller or theoretically cleaner petrol engines, and the demand for diesel supposedly just isn't there. It's more expensive at the pump. So where are we at? Give us an update. Why did you think this would be a good topic? What have you seen?
I get asked this question fairly regularly, mate, from punters. You know, what I'm after an SUV, depending on what type of SUV they're after. Should I, because of what's going on in the world, should I stick with diesel? Should I go hybrid? Should I have an electric one? Should I just buy a petrol one? What should I do? My advice so far could be subject to change, obviously, because of the way the world is. My advice so far has been, if you're buying a big SUV, as in, when I say big, I mean X5, Range Rover, Q7, KN, or not KN because it's a petrol only, but you get my brief, that size. I still think the engines suit, the diesel engines suit them cars better than any other engine. Just the way they behave, the torque, for what they do when they drive down the road. I think they're like a marriage made in heaven. For that size car, good horsepower, load of torque, you can tow with them. And people do buy big SUVs to tow. Now, if you have a hybrid car or a petrol car, yeah, you can tow, but they've not got the torque and they're a bit sluggish. And you feel that when you're, if you drive a petrol X5 and then you drive a diesel one, you can feel the difference in the torque levels are so much more poignant in the diesel car. Now, when people ask you the same question about a level down, maybe Evoque, GLC, Mercedes, Q5 even, I'd say petrol, because it's a smaller car and doesn't command so much power, essentially, so much torque. They are really, they're not, I mean, we call them SUVs, but they're just jacked up cars. They are cars, essentially. So I actually think going forward, they probably suit a petrol engine better. And actually, over the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a lot more of that type of car come through as a petrol. Like when you go back 7, 8 years, not even maybe that far, 6 years, you'd have a diesel Evoque. Everything would be, there'd be hardly any petrols. And if we got offered a petrol, we'd be rubbing our hands together thinking, flipping hell, we've got one here. We're going to sell this. We're going to have a huge markup on it because you can't go and buy another one. There ain't one. No one ordered them. But now the pendulum's slightly changing. I mean, Jaguar Land Rover is not the greatest example because they're older engines, their E-Gen engine or Ingenious engine.
What? Sorry, go on.
Is really unreliable and blows up fairly frequently, to be fair. So the petrol equivalent is a lot better because the DPFs as well, it's a problem. If you're a mum and you've got a little SUV and you're just pottering around and you're in a little diesel, the DPFs get blocked up. So then you've got to go on a nice long run. And if they get too blocked up, they blow the turbos up. And then you blow an engine up. Then you've got huge problems. Whereas a petrol engine requires loads less maintenance. But on the bigger stuff, on the bigger cars, I still, because I think they're used differently. I mean, people use the bigger stuff differently to the lower level SUVs.
But if things are changing, because not only are manufacturers for new vehicles steering away from the diesel stuff, but also I do think people are buying less diesels. I think when you look at the market, people, you just said, you see a lot more of the petrol stuff coming through anyway. Does that mean you might be taking a bit of a financial punt on a diesel? Like maybe the demand isn't going to necessarily be there if you're buying a car and 3 years later looking to change it. Are you going to struggle? Because who wants a diesel at that point?
Well, you're not going to struggle because they're all still Euro 6. You know, they're all still ULEZ compliant. So they've still got a market, mate. There's still loads of them. Don't forget, these manufacturers still sell lots and lots of diesel cars across the range. And we are talking specifically about SUVs. I bet if we add a chart up now, knowing what I know, they still make more diesel SUVs than they do petrols. There are a lot more petrols around now and hybrids, but I bet there's still loads and loads of diesels developed, for sure. So there are petrol equivalents now. And actually, if you live in the city, and you're not doing loads of miles, even in London, like we've seen with these new Range Rovers and these new, they're all like this, these 440 hybrids and the P510E and all that. Because they're petrol, these people are doing 6,000 miles a year and they're not clogging the DPFs up because they're going in the dealerships every 10 minutes because the DPFs are clogging up. So, whether the petrol car doesn't have that, it doesn't clog up. So,
just to make myself feel better, DPF is diesel particulate filter, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Because I was just nodding along and I was like, what if I think he's saying something and he's saying something? So, just to clarify.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so I was literally in this conundrum, right? So, the X2, when I decided to get rid of the RS6 and change everything up and go back to an X3 for Vicky, I had the same thing. I was like, do I get another M40i? Do I get an M40D or do I get the 30E, the hybrid one? And I really went back and forth, and we did speak about it quite a bit at the time, because the 40i is as incredible as that engine is, and I kind of missed the smoothness and the incredibleness of that engine. I just felt it was unnecessary in terms of performance and fuel economy. Not that it was ever horrific on fuel economy, but I did notice that, well, I think I was aware that I could have better fuel economy. The 30E as the hybrid was interesting, but probably wasn't the best application of a hybrid at that time. Like the X330, I don't think is mind-boggling technology, not huge range, quite impacts the boot space, and I was just like, doesn't look as cool. You know, I just was like, eh. So then I rested on the diesel because I was like, well, still getting killer looks, still getting good performance with improved economy. Mm-hmm. But ever since then, mainly based on you being the devil in my shoulder, I've become increasingly nervous that I've ended up with a product that maybe not many people are actually going to want moving forward. Because all I see knocking around are 40Is. I see so few 40Ds.
Yeah, because that's the trend at the moment. I mean, the 40Is are selling at the moment more because of what they are. You know, people have got a bit of a fetish for them at the moment, you know, because they're great value for money. You know, you buy like a 3-year-old one for 40 grand, say, a nice one, you know what I mean? And they're just riding a bit of a trend at the moment. It's a bit like McCanns, you know, there was a time where they were just riding a bit of a wave, and I think the 340Is are doing that now, you know. Fair. And then Audi had a run with SQ5s.
Yeah, okay, good point.
You know, they all have these little runs. They will come off because people go, well, everyone that wanted a 340i, they've all had one. Well, we want to change now, we want something else, and then they'll move to another model.
Well, the new X3 will come along, which is what I'm waiting for. But, but you know, there's the proof in the pudding. When the new X3 gets unveiled, and I'm sure Vicky's going to go, I want one, and I'm going to say, great, let's get one. I will be in the same conundrum, and I cannot tell you right now which powertrain I would go for.
The thing is, as well, you're more educated than the normal punter. And you will convince yourself why you want one engine from another. The normal punter, and I'm not talking about most of the people that listen to us because they know, they half know, they're petrol heads. But the normal general punter, I haven't got a clue.
Well, my mum and my dad are perfect examples. My dad, clueless as hell.
My sister's the same.
Yeah, went back and forth through diesel and petrol a million times over, couldn't decide, read every single Daily Telegraph article, and each generation or each time he was stolen, he had to buy another one, he would go back and forth. I'm going to have a diesel. Oh, no one wants diesel. I'm going to have a petrol. No one's going to want petrol.
Yeah.
You know, he would constantly be clueless but stressed about it.
And a petrol one, didn't he?
And the last one was a petrol one, I think. Because he was convinced diesel was dying, was going to be dead, was all going to be banned. No one's going to want diesel. He was going to lose all his money, so he thought it'd be a safer bet to go petrol.
But that wasn't true.
My mum got convinced kind of the same thing. So she's had the Evoques now. She was diesel, and she's now just gone back to petrol because she was worried as well that diesel was going to die and she'd be safer off in a petrol.
But that's more like it. I think more people are buying. You're starting to see more and more petrol Evoques now than what you did, like I said, 5-6 years ago. Everything was diesel. But the smaller cars, I do think they suit that 2-litre petrol engine. Because don't forget, these petrol engines now, they're so efficient. And if we flip it on its head to like a car, like a Golf, for instance, and you have the Golf GTI or a Golf GTD, by the way, that had a run for a few years.
I remember you saying it not that long ago.
Everyone bought Golf GTDs. Now they all buy GTIs and Golf Rs.
Yeah.
Because the efficiency of these smaller petrol engines now, they're hardly any different to the diesel.
And also, I do think there is a bit of a stigma around diesel still. I think there's still a question mark of, in this world that we live in, just the word diesel has a negative connotation. And I think with ULEZ, which for those international viewers, it's essentially a absolute rip-off scam that the Mayor of London has put in place to just ruin anyone.
I
despise the guy. I'm going to come out and say it. Sadiq Khan, current Mayor of London, I think is arguably the worst mayor that London has ever seen.
He's ruined London.
He's 100% ruined London. Yeah. 100% ruined London. And I just think he's a scammer. Like, he's literally out just to make as much money for himself as the mayor.
Yeah.
I don't mean personally, but, you know, ULEZ targets people with older, more higher emission vehicles to try and create a cleaner city centre.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with it is you are essentially creating those people making a living with their dodgy transit van that they can't afford to replace,
but keeps their economy business. Bubble.
Yeah, an economy bubble. You know, you're forcing people to have cleaner, newer, greener vehicles, or forcing them onto public transport so you can make even more money off them. Anyway.
Well, you're affecting the people that are less fortunate, there basically. You
go. Yeah, we're getting into politics again. Yeah. Classic us. because of things like ULEZ and stuff like that, I think people are nervous around diesel because they're just going, smelly old diesel. Surely soon enough, that's going to get banned. I'm going to get hit with a big tax, or I'm going to be charged to drive into my city centre because I've got a big smelly diesel, even though we know a lot of the times the emissions are very similar.
Yeah, they're all the modern diesels now. They're all compliant and they're all Euro 6. So in terms of values, I mean, you know, I do it as a living and as a job. And when people offer me a diesel, especially an SUV, even if it is a little diesel Evoque, I still buy it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't make
you nervous. You don't think
I'm going to have this. Same with your... you know, your X3, whether it's a 2 litre diesel or the 2 litre petrol. I'm still buy it if it's
still
a diesel.
Buy it. That's good to know.
Of course. Yeah.
When that new one comes along, I'm going to do part X. Well, yeah, let us know in the comment section below if you're watching on YouTube, where is your head at? But petrol versus diesel. And it's very different around the world because in America, for example, diesel just ain't a thing.
When we went there, you couldn't believe it.
They're just not into diesel. No. Like, that's just like really not being a vibe. So yeah, where are you in the world? Is one or the other more popular? And is your position changing if you have historically always bought diesels? You now start to think, oh, maybe I should get a petrol or hybrid or vice versa. And don't talk to us if you're thinking about going electric, not because we don't like you, just because I'm more interested in petrol versus diesel rather than to electric, because I think that's a bigger change, right?
Huge.
If you're thinking of petrol to electric, you're thinking of diesel to electric. I want to know if you're going from diesel to petrol.
Or vice versa.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Because
everyone's
circumstances are very different as well, by the way. You know, some people do 25,000 miles a year and they have to have a diesel.
I'd actually be fascinated by that. I think that's going to be super interesting. Well, talking about super interesting, I saw an article on our good old Autocar, one of the sites we love to use for topics over here on the podcast. And they said, the article reads, top used mid-engine sports cars from just £2,000.
Wow.
And I started going, hold on a sec, you've got my attention, because this is right up my street. Because the mid-engine car, the mid-engine sports car, I think that is a vibe. Like, if you're a petrolhead, like, that is a car that everyone should experience in some shape or form.
I thought you was going to say then, the mid-engine car is dying.
No, no.
I thought, oh, here we go, not again.
I don't think it is, because the mid-engined powertrain vehicle... feels like it's going to be here a while. See what I did there? But yeah, no. So I think, you know, if you're going to go through life as a petrol and wanting to try cars, you've got to at some point drive a mid-engine car. Now, this shows how out of touch I am. I read that and I started thinking, oh my God, like £2,000, is that going to be like a really cheap Miura that I haven't thought of? Or like, what's going to be the really exciting low-slung mid-engine supercar? That's not quite what this list looks like. I've got to be honest.
You got to be excited for no reason.
Got to be excited. So we'll skim through and some of these are going to surprise you. Maybe I'll zoom in. Now we'll start off at the high end, just as Autocar have, with the R8, obviously.
It's not a supercar, it's the V8
sports
one.
Car. The title is sports car.
Good, because that's what that car is. Not the V10, by the way. The V10, the newer shape V10, that is a supercar. This V8 car... that's not a supercar.
To be fair, they've called both. They've said that you can get the V8 from around 32 grand and the V10 from around 45.
And you spend 32 grand a year maintaining it.
You've said this a lot before. I don't care, because look at that thing. I mean, it's just... I'm sorry, and you bang on it. It's not a real supercar. It's not a real sports car. It is fantastic. And I've said it a long time before, and I fly the flag for it. And also, dear friend of the show and... car park chat co-host Paul Waliseo.
He's got one.
He's got one. So we can't go in on it.
No, hold on a minute. Let me say something nice about it.
Please.
It's very iconic.
Iconic.
Yes.
That's it. A pleasure to drive with both engines. The V8's really nice to drive, mate. It's super smooth. It's a cruiser.
It's a cruiser.
It's like a Mustang that looks like a supercar.
I mean, to be fair, I would still rather that than a Mustang.
I think it's cool. And at 30-odd grand, and I know you're going to say, oh, the maintenance is insane.
It is.
But that's a 30 grand mid-engine sports or supercar. Yeah. Even at 45 grand for the V10, like, that is a very nice, affordable, depending on where you are in the world or who you are, sports car. So I'm going to give that. I think that's cool. Moving on.
That is a piece of shit.
Lotus Esprit.
No chance.
Lotus Esprit. Today's price is starting around 26 grand.
Really?
Yeah, a good one will easily do 100,000 miles, according to Autocar, without serious complaint. Now, that I somehow find hard to believe, but I have no experience with the Esprit, but obviously Lotus comically stands for lots of trouble, usually serious.
Yeah.
So the thought of one doing 100,000 miles without serious complaint makes me feel like whoever wrote this article is a Lotus Esprit owner.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. Lotus people, let us know. Like, are Esprits particularly reliable? I've got to get a bottle of water, by the way. My throat is drying up.
Are you dying?
Have you had experience of an Esprit?
Well, I mean, I've been in one, and actually, I tell you what, as a kid, there was one at the bottom of my road, and I adored it. And it was actually in the same road, and his neighbour had the Escort Cosworth, which is why I bought the Escort Cosworth years later, because I drooled over this actual car, the turbo thing, and the Escort Cosworth.
Didn't they do an Esprit GT3?
Don't know.
I think they did. I don't know. I'm really... Esprit is not my... It's not my Lotus. I mean, they stopped making it just after I was born, so I guess it makes sense.
But yeah, but I mean, it's like 90s car,
I
right?
I bet they're great to drive, though.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've probably definitely been in... I mean, I've definitely probably been in one.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That memorable.
I've driven one. Yeah.
Did you see a few weeks ago Harry Metcalf's piece on the Lancia Fulvia?
What's that?
Okay. It's a Zagato. Anyway, it's a really nice storytelling piece of how essentially he was growing up there, living on the road, and turned up, came home one day from school, and one was parked outside his parents' house, and he fell in love with it, and he ended up buying that exact car.
Oh, wow.
And he went back 50 years later. And so your story about your neighbour reminded me of that
story.
Yeah, you should go watch that. You won't care about the car.
Well, go and buy it. Go and find the actual Esprit.
Apparently, it'll be running really well with however many miles it's got on it. But yeah, very cool, and looks the bomb. So yeah, why not? Now, a bit more in our territory, Porsche Cayman.
Yeah, great car.
So, 50 grand for a 718, but we're going back to the 987 generation.
Right.
Now, I we've spoken a lot about Boxster S.
Yeah.
But this era Cayman is still lovely.
Yeah.
And a good driver's car.
Yeah.
What's maintenance like on that?
Terrible.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they all suffer from ball scoring, which was a Porsche trait in around that time, you know, 2004 to sort of 2007, 2008.
Like, is that a generalization though? That's a bit like when I bought the 996. Like, there's so many forums going, oh, ball scoring. Oh, which cylinder's ball scored? Like,
all right. Well, I rebuilt about three or four of them.
Did you?
Yes.
You do buy in crappers though. So.
Well, not anymore. That's why I sell 0 to 3 year old cars. But back in the day when I didn't have any money and no one would help me, I used to have to buy crap. Yes. And I bought crap like this that was broken and rebuilt it. Thank you.
No, I don't disbelieve
you. I couldn't think of anything worse.
Really?
Mate, honestly.
You really think a 987 generation Cayman is a disaster?
Well, if it's got ball scoring, yeah.
What if it doesn't have ball scoring?
Then it's all right.
All right, so make sure it hasn't got ball scoring.
Yeah, make sure it's a manual as well in that age, not a auto. You won't hear me say that very often. But
that's because it was pre-PDK?
Yeah, it was Tiptronic.
Tiptronic and just
terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And like that car, that weight, that engine size, manual's going to be lovely.
Yeah,
and it's
fine,
still
yeah.
getting you in the Porsche life.
Yeah.
For some reason, it doesn't do as much for me as the Boxster. The really early Boxsters really turned me on. But an early Cayman, I'm like, eh.
No, it's a good car. I'll tell you what, they sound good.
They sound good.
They do. If you bought like a... It'd be a little bit older, it'd be a 987 like .2, so like a 2014 car. And that was a 981, wasn't it?
That's a 981, yeah.
That was a 981. A great engine, great sounding.
Oh, yeah, the car. 981 Cayman GTS.
Yeah.
What's that, about 45 grand maybe?
Even the S. I remember back then, because then I started to get a bit of traction, I had a bit more money back then. And I remember buying one of them Cayman S's for myself. And at the time, it was quite new. And I remember thinking, you don't need to buy a 911.
Yeah.
It's so good, this car. You don't need a 911. So, yeah. I mean, how things have changed.
How things have changed. Now, this is where the list starts to go a bit skew-if for me. Because I will come out and say it, and a lot of you love to attack my knowledge.
Vast knowledge.
My really, really limited knowledge and my credentials as a petrolhead. MGF.
Yeah.
95 to 2002.
Brilliant.
I had no idea this was mid-engined.
Brilliant.
Absolutely no clue.
Yeah.
I'm now looking at it and obviously I see the massive side vents and I'm like, oh, well, that's a clue.
Yeah.
But this tiny little package, a car that I recognize from bumbling around on the road in that era, I would have been between 5 and 10 years old. So
yeah.
No idea. Mid-engine.
It's the worst car in the world. Honestly, they literally used to do head gaskets and overheat like there's no tomorrow.
So Autocar says, about as entry-level as a mid-engined ownership gets, the MGF is also a modern classic with all the ups and downs that go with it. Early ones weren't best built, but all ages can suffer head gasket failure, a leaky hood, shonky hydrogas suspension, and corrosion. What a great, great sales.
But that was back then, mate. 1995. Everything done egg gaskets in 1995.
But we are looking at a list, or we are compiling a list of affordable or cheap mid-engine sports cars.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be recommending the MGF. I mean, how much horsepower did it have?
4.
What engine did it have?
It was like 1.8, I think, something like that.
I mean, I actually quite like the way it looks.
Yeah.
And the fact it's mid-engine is like kind of cool to me, but it's so small. Like, did it have a boot?
Not a big one.
No. And what happened in the front? Was there a frunk?
Well, basically, the front was like sitting under a sieve, especially when it rained.
Because it's a two-seater. It's like an MX-5 type thing, like but mid-engined.
Yeah, it's like a rip-off of an MX-5. It's like a really bad... That is what it rivaled, by the way.
Okay.
And the MR2 back in the day.
Fine.
Because that MR2 will be in there as well.
I'm sure it must be.
Because that was a good car.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll come onto it in a second.
Yeah, and if it's on there.
More affordable, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, MGF.
No, not more affordable.
Not more affordable?
No, no, it'd be dearer.
So mate, they're saying you can get MGF of two grand.
Yeah.
It's a 1.8 litre.
Yeah.
VVC.
Yeah, just a four cylinder. I mean, it's a disaster.
Yeah. I mean, cool. Isn't it quite amazing, by the way, that MG having such a comeback in the world of electric?
Well, I tell you what as well. They do a little car. Their little SUV. It's a good little car. Yeah.
One of the most affordable EVs you can get.
Yeah.
And then they come out with this new two-seater sports car EV thing.
They're having
a real renaissance.
They're cheap, though. They've basically taken over from Dacia. Entry-level Dacias used to be 6,000 quid or 7,000 quid. And slowly now they're starting to creep up, and MG have slipped into the affordable, cheap car market.
Cheap EV market.
And EV market, yeah.
Dacia or Dacia?
No idea.
Okay.
Renault.
Another Lotus, unsurprisingly, because let's face it, they are some of the best affordable mid-engine cars. Lotus Elise. I would hands down have an S1 Elise every day of the week.
But that had problems as well.
Autocar saying get the S2. It's easy to live with and drive. It's got more compliant Bilstein suspension, larger wheels, easier roof mechanism, etc. But the S1 just looks the bomb. I mean, yes, okay, fine, it's going to go wrong, but I mean, look at that, it's just so cool.
You're just sitting in a tub, yeah.
You're sitting in a tub, great to drive, they're saying around 22 grand. I think the S1s are starting to gain in value. They're starting to become
$22,000.
A modern classic. Yeah, 22 grand, they're saying, for 37,000 mile 2011 car.
What, would it have been that new? No, couldn't have been.
No, I have no idea how much an S2...
In 2001? No chance.
No, an S2 is not 2001, that's an S1. 2000. Let's have a little Google. Hold on a sec. Right.
That's more... I would say that's more money than new. So that is...
S1s are going through the roof at the minute. Lotus Elise S2, price when new.
Sometimes I find that fascinating, that some of these real old stuff that...
Price when new, yeah, 23 grand.
Yeah. So literally, apart from maintaining, that's a free car. If you bought that car new, you've driven it for 20 years... Put 37,000 miles on it, you get your money back.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Incredible. But there's a lot of older cars that are like that, by the way.
Yeah, 100%. And modern classics, I say, going a bit nuts now.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have known. There would have been a lot of time when that wouldn't have been that money.
Yeah, it would have been 2,000 quid.
Yeah, so you would have had to really stay strong.
Yeah.
And hope.
Stood your ground.
Or just lucked into it. He's probably just gone, it's worth crap, so I'll just hold on to it.
Yeah, it's not worth anything. Yeah, I'm not selling it now.
Exactly.
There we go.
Here's the MR2.
Yeah.
I've always loved the idea of the MR2.
Me too.
This is the third gen, is the boxier shape, is what they're saying from late 2002. It's the last one, huh?
Yeah.
Enthusiasts know it's a great little device with flexible engine, sharp handling and a sweet 6-speed box.
Yeah.
Great chat from Autocar. I've never driven one.
I have.
Good, good.
Yeah, yeah, as in...
Compared to an MX-5?
Yeah, similar.
Similar.
Yeah,
As fun?
Yeah.
Does it feel...
It's a long time ago, mate, but...
No, but still, you can call... You know, you've got a good memory.
Really, really slow, obviously.
But do you notice the mid-engine? So my whole pitch coming into this was that, I think... driving a mid-engine car inherently feels different to front engine or rear engine, as it should. It's a unique driving experience. It's often more dynamic and point. Do you notice it in an MR2?
No.
Not so much.
No, I don't. I don't think so. No. Me personally, unless something's got real proper power, I don't think you notice mid-engine until you get up in the, you know.
No, because it's cornering is where you feel it.
Yeah, but I don't think you're ever really going fast enough. That's what I'm saying. Do you know what I mean? In a little car.
I guess that might debunk the rest of this list then. But yeah, Boxster, we already mentioned it. So like, big fan of early Boxsters, and we've talked about them a lot on this show. BMW i8, this is such a fascinating one because
it is, yeah.
They're saying now you can get a BMW i8 with full history, 2015 car, okay, 161,000 miles, let's come back to that in a second, for 30 grand. Now, that's a particularly interesting example, but more so they're what, 35, 40 grand? For
but hold
i8?
On a minute, mate. In terms of, oh no, it's a bit newer, isn't it? I was going to say, that's very similar to an R8, but the early R8s were 2007, 2008. Yeah. Yeah, so that almost is a newer car. Old, yeah. But I like them still.
I just found it so unengaging to drive.
Yeah.
I really didn't like how it drove.
Yeah.
And I hated getting in and out of it.
That's the worst thing. I mean, we've sold a few, two or three of them we've sold. And we've always sold them. They've always never hung around. They've always been good cars. It is a BMW, by the way, so it will work, of course. But, yeah, like, if you get in them now, they're probably a bit dated. I mean, they look like a spaceship when they come out. Do you remember?
I still think they look damn modern. I mean, they nailed it in that sense. And it's the closest BMW have come to a sort of supercar-looking vehicle for a while. And I think if you rocked up in a 2015, 2016 i8, most people would assume it's a new car.
That's another topic for us, actually. What old car still looks modern today?
Yeah, fair. Yeah, yeah, it's done well and still looks
modern. And then vice versa, the other way around.
What new car looks old?
Yeah, no, because there are some, mate.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Do you know
wrong.
What I mean? Like the Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio. I mean, that looks
yeah,
old.
Yeah, yeah, it does look old.
Do you know what I mean? But it's not old.
But the i8 is a very interesting one, and obviously you're getting the hybrid tech, and it depends... It depends why you're buying that. I still just don't see it as a driver's car.
No.
I see it as a fantastic showcase of technology, and it was ahead of its time, as BMW kind of have been with their i stuff.
But arguably, out of all that list that you've just said, the real driver's cars are the two Porsches and the Lotus. The rest of them aren't driver's cars. They're terrible.
Yeah. So no, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to. I just always sit somewhere weird with me where I want to love it, but because I drove it, I don't.
Fair.
I don't. And then, Vauxhall, the VX220. Now, before you crush my dreams, when I was growing up, so this is from 2000 to 2005, so I was between 10 and 15 years old.
Yeah.
I really wanted one of these when it came out.
Yeah.
So, I really wanted one.
Yeah. So that's the 220. That's the fast bastard one.
Yeah.
So that was Lotus derived, was that? Was that a partnership with Lotus?
Yeah,
they put a Vauxhall engine in it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
So it was based kind of on an Elise. It was like a partnership, an agreed partnership.
Yeah. It was a fast bugger, that was.
Was it fun to drive? It must have been fun to drive.
It was fast. It had like an Astra VXR engine in it. It was like 200-odd horsepower, was it?
I guess.
It was a VX220, so I guess it was 220 horsepower.
That would make sense. It says here.
And it was like a stab rat.
Yeah, check for a rattly timing chain, lol.
Yeah.
Turbos need a refresh, oil leaks.
Yeah, 2-litre turbo, look.
But yeah, 2-litre turbo. They're saying 55,000 miles. Ooh, 20 grand.
Yeah, that's another car that would have been that new.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think the Lotus is more iconic, right? Like, I really wonder, like, it's a hard push to justify. I would have bought that if it was half the price of the Elise, but I don't think I'm buying that over an Elise.
It's faster than the Elise. I mean, it's really fast than a car, mate.
Really?
For back then, yes.
Kind of want to have a go in one now. Yeah. I when I was young, I was obsessed with it.
It's got the worst torque steer ever.
Brilliant.
It was the Astra that had the torque steer because it's front wheel drive.
Yeah, I was going to say that'd be weird if that was a front wheel drive car.
No, it's mid engine.
Yeah.
So it's rear drive. Yeah, no, sorry, I'm getting mixed up. It was the Astra with the terrible... You'd literally drive it down the road and it'd go left.
As bad as an Abarth.
Way worse than an Abarth.
Really?
It literally put you in the curb. Yeah, okay. It was terrible, yeah.
Oh, by the way, did you see at Salon Privé that Abarth Electric turned up and everyone was revving it and people got really upset?
I mean, I'd get upset. I would got upset watching it. Didn't you?
No, I'm not as upset by it as people are. I do think it's gimmicky, but I still really like that car.
Of course you do.
I still really like that car. I would have one to come back and forth. If I was Schmee, I'd get one just to come back and forth to the studio.
Of course you would. Because that's all you could do in it anyway.
VX220, I'm a big fan. Evora, another Lotus. Oh, that's the end of the list? No way. Hold on a sec. That's the end of the list. There must be some others.
Well, we've done 20 odd cars we've been through.
No, we haven't. There are 10. Mm. Lotus Evora. Yeah, great, I'm going to say, but that's not that affordable. There's got to be a couple of other affordable mid-engine cars, aren't there?
Didn't we drive an Evora?
Yeah, yeah. We've driven an Evora a couple of times. Affordable mid-engined cars. What are we missing? You could get some of the crazy Japanese stuff, couldn't you? Let's see what's mid-engine? On this lid. Yeah, it's some of the little K cars, you know, little tiny K cars. Okay, so yeah, MR2. This is road and track now. This is America. Road and track. Same MR2, thing. Porsche Boxster, Porsche Cayman, Porsche 914, Lotus Esprit, Lotus Elise, Lotus Evora, Honda Beat. There we go. That's one. I've driven that car.
What about an S2000? Is that a mid-engine car? Nah. Is that a front-engine car? Engine,
yeah, Honda Beat I drove in Hong Kong was amazing. This thing as well, which we got, the Suzuki Kala, which was submitted for one of the Rate My Ride episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's get into it. Ferrari 348. And on speaking of that, on Mondial, because, hey, people, 348 and 348 less so. Mondial is still sub 50K. You can still find a Mondial sub 50K.
What, your car?
Oh, you're just such a prick, aren't you? You're just such a prick. Mondials are punchy. There's two Ferraris. Actually, I am seriously, so after my experience in the Miura, where I declared I have to at some point own an Italian 60s sports car, I've like been all over car and classic. I've been like just searching. And there's one potential that I would love to tell the story of and do, which is the cheapest 60s Ferrari you can buy today. And it's the only other Dino ever made.
Why don't you do it then?
Because it's a really fugly car. And I drove one at Furlongs about 5 years ago. It's the Dino GT4. And it's...
Is it worth a few quid?
No, that's the point. It's really affordable. That's what I'm saying. It's a really affordable 60s Ferrari.
Why don't you buy it then? You must have some
I don't
money
think I love the way it looks.
Who cares? Investment. Do you want to go halves? No. How much money is it?
Like, you can get them for like 40 grand. The one that's really the one to have, if you actually genuinely want to do it, it's a proper investment, you don't want to mess around, is the 365s. I think it's the 365 GTC4, 2 plus 2.
How much is that?
They're probably, if you buy them well, Duke of London, Merlin, I won't talk about his numbers, that's unfair. You could buy one sub 100K for sure. And it's essentially a Daytona. It's a four-seat Daytona.
Wow.
So you could buy one sub 100K, probably need to spend 30K making it great and sit on it for another 10 or 15 years. No, less. I think another 5 years and I think you'll make money. 10 years easily.
How much?
I don't know. It's really hard to know because it's one of the... Because you know the 400i, you know that really... You know the shape of a 404? Because of that car, a lot of people overlook the 365, which was actually the manual, rarer, proper
what engine.
It's the V12. It's the proper, right. yeah, proper,
proper old thing.
Yeah, why am I having a mind blank today? Anyway, it's real deal. I say like Daytona engine. It's the same thing.
What's a Daytona? 3 million quid? 4 million?
No, Daytona's hundreds of thousands. I think.
Oh,
I think Daytona must be 500 or 600 grand. I think.
Oh,
let's have a quick look.
But they're a very pretty car, aren't they? A Daytona.
That's the problem. And so I'll show you both of these cars now, just while I've got you on the line here.
Hold the line, caller.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So average price of a Daytona is $700,000. So yeah, it's going to be £400,000 or £500,000, isn't it? I guess. But let me show you. So Ferrari 3
or more
65 GT. GT 2 plus 2. No, that's not the one. That's the really pretty one. I wish it was that one.
Well, how much is that one?
That one's like 300 grand.
Oh.
Or you can get them on a sub 200. GTC 4. No, okay. Well, have I got that wrong?
What's going on
Hold
here?
Hold on. What have I. Well, what car? How do you actually. There we go. It's this one here. Oh, so it's not the 2 plus 2. It's just the GTC 4. Not the 2 plus 2. 365. No, mate. What's going on here? It is the 2 plus 2. Google is being really thick, everyone. Sorry about this. Hopefully by now, Ben would have thrown up some images. Yeah, there we go.
Well, it looks like a wedge of cheese.
It literally is.
Yeah.
But it's the 365 GT4 2 plus 2. I think I'm getting confused with the GTC.
Oh, yeah, well, you it's just 35 the GT4. Quid for
there
that.
You go. So that's the problem. Visually, not great. But same... Exciting dynamics. I think it's a 70s car rather than a 60s car. It's got all the pizzazz of much cooler bits. So here we go. It's still got the front engine V12, 2+2 Grand Tourer. Let me just see in here. Design, but that's I'm so with you. Based purely on the looks, it doesn't excite you, does it?
No,
I just think, oh, it's just a wedge. Like, how unexciting.
Yeah,
but
I have seen that car before, though.
You've seen the knocking around. Well, you would have seen the 400s. Yeah, the 400 is the one that, and that was automatic, so everyone just died. But the 365 was offered as a manual, which is what you want,
right?
And then I'll show you that Dino is the Dino GTC4 is even uglier.
But.
Look, there you go.
Oh, mate, no, that's not
308. Good. 308 GT4 Dino. It's like a little joke, but I kind of really want one. How did we get onto this? What were we talking about?
Well, it's you rattling on about
crappy old Ferraris.
Mid-engine Ferraris.
And also getting completely confused with all my GT4, GTC4, 2+2s, 365, 3. Anyway. So there you go, guys. I'm trying to buy an old Ferrari and not doing very well at it.
You've already bought an old Ferrari.
Yeah, and if you want to buy a mid-engine one, don't buy any of the ones that I want to. I'm trying to keep the prices low. Anyway, that is probably a good point to wrap up today's episode, because I think we're ending up to go into some kind of Looney Tunes chat. Next week, you should be joining us in Spain.
Oh.
During Tony's road trip that he did and my journey down to Morocco in the 360. So that should be good fun, I hope. It's going to look and sound a little bit different. And then after that, you'll be joining us in Monaco. My God, we're taking the podcast on tour. If you want to follow either of us on social media, in the meantime, you can follow Tony at Tony Grubble Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And yeah, subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Turn on notifications. Follow us, please, or give us a rating if you're listening on any of the audio platforms. And check out recast.tv/behindtheglass for live streams and additional content such as the After Chicken Flag series that I do with Paul Wallace. Anyway, we'll catch up with you very soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.